At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. Is transgender identity a fundamental human right? And should states enact policies that allow minors to start gender transitioning without their parents knowing? Joining us on the program to find answers to these questions is Emily Gao, Senior Counsel and Vice President of Advocacy Strategy for Alliance Defending Freedom. Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
So Senate Bill 107 recently went into effect in the state of California. And in part, I'm just going to jump right into it, Emily, because we don't have a lot of time to talk about this very important issue. But part of Senate Bill 107 says this, that the state of California shall provide children with emergency gender-affirming care, which includes puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and even surgeries like double mastectomies. So these are children who identify with the opposite sex that they are born as. It says that the state has an obligation to provide gender-affirming care. I don't like to use that word. I think when we begin using terminology like that, it's misleading in a way. Speak to that, if you will. What is, and that's just a portion of it. It's a lengthy bill, but speak to Senate Bill 107 and what it means.
Yeah, so the California legislature has passed this bill that would deprive parents in any state of custody of their child if the child ends up in California for what you said, you know, is gender transition, basically the puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, even the surgeries. If the parents oppose that, the state of California can take emergency jurisdiction over that child and basically cut the parents out of any decision making regarding the child's health care. This is a flagrant lack of respect, not only for parental rights, but also for the jurisdiction of the 49 other states in the country, including Kentucky. So the California legislature has basically tried to override the jurisdiction of every court in the country outside of California. It's an egregious violation of parental rights and of comity between the states.
What I'm hearing is that California is the only state that has done something like this. Is that correct?
California is the first state to do it. We hope it is the last, but we have heard that other states are also considering similar ideas, similar laws. And some background to what California did. California says that it's responding to the efforts by other states like Texas and Arkansas and Alabama to limit these harmful procedures from being done on children. They've basically taken it off the market. They have forbidden their doctors from performing these completely unnecessary procedures on children that have no basis in science. There's zero evidence that any of these interventions on a child's body have any beneficial effect on the child's mental health, and certainly not on a child's physical health, because they have incredibly harmful side effects, not only to bone density, to a child's mental cognition, but also can even lead to sterilization.
Help me to understand the rationale behind the idea that children have a right to pursue hormone therapy or gender transition surgeries. How do we begin thinking about that? And here's some context. In Kentucky, we have a state senator who had a child who identified with the opposite gender and actually was very public about their identity. And unfortunately, that person just recently, the child of the state senator, took their own life. But to help us understand the mindset that would tell the legislature that children have a fundamental right. In the case of Kentucky, again, we have a state senator who not only believed that, but is advocating for things like what California did.
So I think, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear about this child's loss of life. And I think that it's really important for people to understand gender dysphoria is a real mental health condition, and it needs to be taken very seriously. Gender dysphoria is when a person experiences extreme emotional distress because they feel uncomfortable with their body. They feel uncomfortable with being male or female, and then they begin to identify either as transgender or non-binary. And that medical condition needs to be addressed with serious and thorough and fair investigation of the science and the medicine. And that's what the countries in Europe have been doing. These countries in Europe, like the UK, Sweden, and Finland, they have done serious investigations of the best treatments for gender dysphoria in minors, and they have decided to put a pause and to restrict these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries, even though they had performed them for many years. But they found that there was no beneficial effect on mental health, and certainly very serious harms to a child's physical health. So that's the first thing that people need to understand. But then there's a second thing that people really need to understand, which is gender ideology, and how gender ideology has led to the politicization of healthcare. So right now there is a global debate over the best way to treat gender dysphoria in minors. And while the European countries are, you know, doing a U-turn on these gender transitions, the leading medical organizations, the people are familiar with in America, American Academy of Pediatrics, the Endocrine Society, they're actually rushing headlong, and the Biden administration is as well, into promoting gender transition for children. Why would they do that? Well, they haven't really done a thorough investigation of the science. And not only that, they have censored those doctors who have tried to raise concerns about the harms to children. So there is a lot of politicization of these so-called medical associations by the transgender activists, by the pharmaceutical industry. And so when you have, you know, Planned Parenthood distributing puberty blockers to children, you know, with only one or less visits, you know, one or two visits to the clinic, there are a lot of political actors who are involved in promoting healthcare. And so healthcare has unfortunately become very politicized.
Emily, thank you so much for bringing that up. And that's probably the biggest challenge for lawmakers to go against what medical authorities and what medical organizations are saying. Lawmakers trust the counsel and perspective of professional organizations like the AAP and other organizations like that. That seems to be a huge obstacle. So I want to get back to California. Were these organizations instrumental in passing Senate Bill 107?
Well, I think that the California legislature has for a long time relied on organizations like that to basically embed their guidelines for the treatment of gender dysphoria into the law. So that's what SB 107 does. It basically embeds a particular form of treatment for gender dysphoria into the law. And it does that in a manner that is not based on examination of the science and the evidence. So by contrast, Florida, under Governor DeSantis' leadership, has done a very thorough investigation of the evidence. They had multiple hearings from their Board of Health, Board of Medicine and Osteopathy. They published a report looking into all of the evidence, and they have determined now that they will not cover any sort of gender transition for children, and that doctors will not be allowed to perform it, and therefore parents in Florida will not lose custody of their children if they are, you know, opposed to their children being potentially sterilized with these procedures. So I think that, you know, is a wise model for other states to follow, to have, you know, the state medical establishment looking at the real evidence. And that's what the United Kingdom did after there was a lawsuit against the largest gender clinic in the country. They had a systematic review of the evidence, all of the, you know, reports and studies that have been done, and they found that, you know, children cannot consent to puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones or surgeries, for sure.
Section 5A of Senate Bill 107, it says that a court in California has temporary emergency jurisdiction if the child is present in the state and the child has been abandoned or it's necessary in an emergency to protect the child because that child, and I'm going to skip ahead, is unable to obtain gender-affirming health care or gender-affirming mental health, as defined in that code. What does this mean for, let's say, parents from Kentucky that travel to California and they have a child suffering from gender dysphoria and that child goes to a clinic and says, hey, my parents do not affirm my gender identity. Help me out. What does that mean for that Kentucky family? Could they potentially lose the right to their child?
That's exactly what could happen. It's hard to fathom that California would take such drastic measures, but that is one of the scenarios that could happen. If a child is in California and they declare that they want to, you know, go through gender transition and, you know, that the parents oppose it, the California court can take temporary emergency jurisdiction so that the child would go into the state's custody. There are some other scenarios that could happen as well. Perhaps if the child goes to California and they're staying with a relative in California, you know, that relative could basically help that child be taken away from the custody of their parents. Or even if there is, you know, a custody agreement in Kentucky and there are two divorced parents, and even if one parent has been found to be an unfit parent and they don't have custody of the child, they could take that child to California and declare that the child is there to receive gender transition and basically override the custody agreement that the Kentucky court has reached. So there are many very dangerous incentives that the law creates for children to run away to California or for, you know, an unfit parent to take a child to California.
So, Emily, what we're saying is that Senate Bill 107 is saying that the child is in the driver's seat. That child, by the way, are we talking 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds? What is there an age restriction on this?
There is no age restriction. So any child who's, you know, under the age of, you know, 18 could fall under this law. And there's one more thing to note about this law. So this law would even stretch the hand of the California courts into other states. And the way it would do that is through telehealth. So if a child in Kentucky wants to consult with a doctor in California about gender transition, and they want to get, you know, puberty blockers, or they just express an interest in that, those medical records would then be kept secret from the parents under this law.
So a minor child in the Commonwealth of Kentucky could get online and talk to let's say there's a gender clinic in California and say, hey, I would like to pursue gender transition treatments of some kind. And you're saying, first of all, that that's possible. And secondly, those medical records would be kept secret from their parents?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Are there a number of gender clinics in California that would target or address minors in gender dysphoria?
Unfortunately, yes. There are many gender clinics in California. And that brings me to the case of a young woman named Chloe Cole, who testified against SB 107. She started to suffer from gender dysphoria at the age of 12. And she went to one of these clinics. They prescribed her with testosterone and after puberty blockers, then testosterone. And then at age 15, they performed a double mastectomy on her. And then she very quickly came to regret what had been done to her. And she then filed a medical malpractice lawsuit against the gender clinic, the doctors who performed these procedures on her, and against Kaiser Permanente, the insurance company, basically stating that children cannot give informed consent to any of these interventions on their body, because not only are they too young to have the capacity to give informed consent, there's often no discussion of the high rates of desistance, which desistance means the children stop identifying as the opposite sex or non-binary. The best evidence that we have is that, you know, up to 90% of these kids become comfortable with their bodies if they're allowed to proceed through puberty without any sort of interruption of that. So it's far too drastic and to allow these children to not only go through physical transition, but even social transition. Addressing them with pronouns and names and clothing of the opposite sex is something that can deepen their sense of gender dysphoria. It can reduce the odds that they will desist. Unfortunately, in California, they are rushing more and more children into these drastic, destructive hormonal and surgical interventions that cause irreversible damage, as you may have heard of Abigail Schreier's book on that topic, which is an excellent documentation of how gender dysphoria is now skyrocketing in young people because of the phenomenon of social contagion. And it is causing so many children to become swept into this ideology, and they are suffering irreversible harms as a result of the medical transitions.
Thank you, Emily. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Commonwealth Matters, and we are talking about California Senate Bill 107, a far-reaching bill that has impacts all the way into the Commonwealth of Kentucky regarding transgender identity, minors, and parental rights. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. Richard Nelson here with Emily Cow of Alliance Defending Freedom. We're talking about Senate Bill 107. This is a bill that essentially gives minors the right to determine their own gender identity and to pursue gender transition surgery or therapy without parental rights. And this is an issue, as Emily shared just a few minutes ago, that has far-reaching consequences. It stretches into every single state in the union. It cuts out parental rights. Despite objections from parents, by the way, in California, there's a group called the Promise to America's Parents Coalition, and they asked California Governor Gavin Newsom to veto the bill, but he refused. And as a result, that bill is law in California. It went into effect on January 1st. And Emily, I want to go back to parental rights. Do parents have any rights in California anymore regarding the gender identity of their child?
Well, parental rights are fundamental rights protected by the U.S. Constitution. So parents everywhere in the country do have the right to direct the health care of their child. Unfortunately, California's law, SB 107, tries to override these rights of parents in every state. And that's why SB 107 is unconstitutional. And when it is challenged in court, as it hopefully will be, the courts will have to recognize, I think, that parental rights are fundamental and that what California is doing is unconstitutional.
We talked about medical records and the law keeps medical records of a transgender child away from parents. Have we ever seen anything like that, where a parent would not have access to their own child's medical records based on what the child prefers or what their wishes are? Has there anything like this ever been done before?
Well, unfortunately, yes. In California, they have been lowering the ages at which children can, you know, basically have private visits with the doctor without any parent being involved and keep those medical records secret from parents. And a few other states like Oregon have also been lowering the age. It's now down to 15 in some states, and I believe even 12 years old in some states. So this began with abortion and it's now extended to gender identity concerns. And unfortunately, this seems to be a a growing area in which the state tries to divide parents from their own children. And it has been very destructive to families. I hear from parents of kids who struggle with gender dysphoria all the time, who say that this ideology has destroyed their families. These are parents who are, you know, politically liberal as well as politically conservative. This issue cuts across all political lines. It happens to families of all religions, all ethnicities. So it is an issue that is affecting, unfortunately, a growing number of families. And it's destroying not only the children's minds and their bodies, it's destroying their families. And parents are the ones who know and love their children best. And that's why the courts and the laws should respect the fundamental nature of parents' rights, particularly to direct the child's health care, whether it's their mental health or their physical health.
We had talked about how this impacts other states. If a family from another state come there and their child identifies as the opposite sex, they have, under this law, Senate Bill 107, they have a right to go to a healthcare provider or a gender clinic and to say, my parents don't affirm me, I need help. This, according to the law, the court system can take temporary emergency jurisdiction over that child, regardless of what the parents' wishes are, regardless of what the state law that they came from, regardless of what that says. California law is going to supersede parental rights and other state rights. I'm going to throw another twist into this. What about international law? What about parents from another country that come there and they have a child with gender dysphoria who does the same thing? What is this? What are the implications for international law?
I'm very glad you raised that. It's incredible that California is basically trying to take jurisdiction over any child from anywhere in the world. So if you have, you know, a child who is from one of those countries where these procedures are no longer allowed, so you have a child from Sweden, for instance, and they come to, you know, California for whatever reason, study abroad or, you know, just tourism, and they declare that they want to, you know, transition and they want, you know, to go on puberty blockers and hormones and have surgeries, California courts will be able to take temporary emergency jurisdiction over that child. Basically, this law has embedded this gender ideology into the law. So judges in California really don't have much leeway to respect the rights of parents who don't want their child to undergo these harmful interventions on their bodies. So it's a law with universal reach.
The Kentucky General Assembly is about to resume. What is your advice to state legislators here regarding children with gender dysphoria and regarding parental rights? Those are two different questions there. What would you advise them to be proactive in addressing both of these issues?
Well, children's minds, bodies, and lives are at stake, and family integrity as well. And, you know, every state has the right to pass legislation to protect the health and safety of their citizens. And gender ideology and this radical intervention on children's bodies is a threat to the health and safety of the children of Kentucky. And so, therefore, the Kentucky legislature should regulate the medical establishment's ability to perform these harmful procedures on children's bodies. And they should limit the use of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries on minors for the treatment of gender dysphoria. And I think the medical establishment in the Kentucky government should also look at the real evidence and find that there actually is no evidence of the benefit of these interventions. And actually, the most beneficial treatment for children who struggle with this mental health condition is to treat their mental health. The issue that they struggle with is not in their bodies. Their struggle is in their minds, and therefore permitting counselors and doctors to help children with psychotherapy and counseling is what has been shown to have the most benefit for children. And that's why Kentucky needs the legislature to protect children by limiting harmful interventions on their bodies and allowing doctors to help children, not harm them.
Emily, many people are reluctant to get involved with such a volatile issue. But I want to ask you, what would you say to parents in the Commonwealth of Kentucky concerned about their child and concerned about their ability as parents to direct the upbringing and the health and guide the health of their child? What would you say to parents in Kentucky?
I would encourage them to visit ADF's website and to look at our Parents Toolkit on Critical Theory. That's available to all parents. They can download it for free. I would also encourage them to visit the website of the Promise to America's Parents.org so they can identify the issues that parents are facing and also ways to protect children and parents and family integrity through legislation and policy. There are 40 public policy organizations that have joined the Promise to America's Parents, and these public policy organizations are mobilizing to protect parental rights at the federal and the state and the local level. We didn't have a lot of time to go into it, but these threats of gender ideology don't just come from state governments like California, although they do. They also come from the federal government, and the imposition of gender ideology in Title IX is going to lead to more harms to more children in Kentucky, unfortunately, and to the undermining of parental rights. So there's a great opportunity for parents to educate themselves and for state legislators to have courage. That's what we need in this moment to protect children from these irreversible harms. We need courage and we need information. And I'm thankful for what you're doing. ADF is a partner to all the work that you're doing. And we have the power as the people to push back on the imposition of gender ideology on children. So we need to use that power.
Do you have a word for the church, for pastors who are trying to think through this issue, or church leaders who are wondering what they can do to address it?
I'm so glad you raised that. The church is critical to the movement to protect parental rights. When we had the Promise to America's Parents celebration last August, we heard from several faith leaders who are speaking out against gender ideology and speaking up for parental rights and the protection of children, because the family is a biblical institution, and it's a key institution to not only protect children, but to uphold society. And we need pastors to be courageous, to speak out about God's plan for us being created male and female, and all the things that lead from us being created male and female, and that's marriage and that's family. And these institutions are under attack by the state right now. So we need courageous pastors to stand alongside parents to protect children and to protect the integrity of the family.